Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back-to-school shopping done now at Amazon.com/back-to-school and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.
Straight out of Austin, Texas, it's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first on Second Thought.
You heard the lady on Second Thought, episode 86, brought to you by Hook'em.com and our friends at Bud Light. I am Cedric Golden. I'm joined by my boy, the Duck, Kirk Bowles. Exciting, exciting podcast on this beautiful day in Austin, Texas.
I'm looking forward to today. This will be fun.
This will be fun. We're going to talk UT hoops, men and women. The men and
that
women
may not be fun.
Are headed in opposite directions.
Are they ever?
Are they ever, Shaka, having problems? But first, a special guest joining us via phone. Let's get right to it. It's hardball season.
It is.
And we'll welcome Texas head baseball coach David Pierce. Joining us via phone in the dungeon. This is a real treat, Kurt.
I know it. You know
David
me.
Pierce, illustrious baseball coach at the University of Texas, the Longhorns. Start the 2018 season Friday, Louisiana Lafayette, 6:30 p.m. at the Dish. Coach, how are you today?
Well, I'm doing great. Just in the last couple of days of our preparation, getting ready for a grueling schedule and exciting schedule coming up.
A grueling schedule. You got such a soft schedule. You know,
Arkansas.
Over with Lafayette, you got LSU, you got Stanford, you got Arkansas. What in the hell were you doing with this schedule, David?
Powder puffs.
Well, I was looking for Our Lady of the Foul Line, and I couldn't find any of them. So we settled with Lafayette, LSU, and Arkansas, Stanford. How about that?
Hey, you're a maniac.
I gotta ask you. That's a double-edged sword. I guess it's a good thing that you're going to find out what you're dealing with before the conference season. These guys know what they're up against. I mean, the teams we just mentioned are all national championship type teams.
Well, I'll be honest with you. This schedule is a risk-reward schedule, and if you play well and succeed in the schedule, you got a chance to host. If you survive the schedule, you got a chance to get in, and if you lose some confidence and spiral, you could be eliminated. So it's going to test our toughness, but I try to educate our team, and all over our board right now, it's all the different polls and how the RPI works, and I want them to know what we're going up against, because I think when you're more educated, you might have a goal every single day of trying to strive to get better. And we'll be tested, but I like it for the simple fact that you come out of it, you're prepared for the Big 12, which we were the number one RPI conference in the country last year. So it definitely prepares you. You just got to, and I told the kids, I truly think our ability to maintain confidence through our non-conference schedule is going to be the key.
Well, I'd love it. I love you have a challenging schedule, and I think Texas needs to do things like this. You're going to LSU. I love Coach Gus to death. You know, his birthday was a Tuesday, turned 87, but he did not like to leave the Dish, does he? He was a homebody. And I like how you go to Stanford, you go into LSU, that kind of side of thing.
Well, I worked with Wayne Graham for nine years.
Right.
Coach didn't like to really leave either. But the one thing about it is it also creates some experiences for our players. For us to be able to go to LSU and play in front of 12,000, go to Arkansas and play in front of 10,000. I mean, you can't – if you can play in those environments, you can play in any environment, and – it makes us become, in our communicating skills, nonverbal. We have to be able to communicate without talking. So all of those things play a part of it, but the RPI has changed as well, and you get more points for going on the road. So we want to continue to play 32 to 35, 36 home games, but have some exciting on the road as well.
Well, you're doing that, and I know coming out of the fall, David, I think I read where you said it was like the best fall session you've ever had as a coach. Why did you like it so much, and what do you see as the strength of your team?
Well, we brought in 21 new players, so that's always intriguing to see what's going to happen with the unknown. And we started out September in a really grueling period of just kind of seeing what we're made of from a mental perspective before we went into our team period in October. And the thing that I really appreciated from the players is that our returnees had great leadership, and it really expedited our newcomers being a part of the team. And that's what I meant by saying that I really felt like this was a refreshing fall. There's some energy, there's some athleticism, but it was a reflection of our leadership more so than anything.
Well, I know that early in preseason workouts, you said that it would be Nolan Kingham, Chase Schubert, Blair Henley. I know Augie always told me that you know to get ready for a tournament situation, gotta have four really reliable guys. Now we know what those guys can do. Who are a couple of other pitchers who are going to have to figure into that mix? The Tuesday starter, the Wednesday starter, and that fourth guy that's gonna help you in a tournament situation, Coach.
It's going to be interesting because we've got a young man that's a freshman, Nico O'Donnell, that really exudes a starting pitcher. He's a 3-4 pitch mix. He commands his own, and he's not intimidated, but he's a real cerebral kid. And so he gets locked into that moment, pitch at a time, and I like his demeanor. Another young man, Matthew Whalen, is a freshman, and then Brian Elder. Those three kids, or all three freshmen, are going to have to grow up quickly to potentially fill the void of that fourth starter, the Nick Kennedy type kid. And then we have the from Parma, Italy, Matteo Vocchi. And Matteo has really, you know, what's interesting about Matteo, well, there's a lot of things interesting about Matteo, but as far as pitching, you know, he taught himself how to pitch on the internet. And
really?
He had 7
wow.
when he got here. Yeah, but the problem is he didn't have 7 good pitches. And so what we've tried to do is just narrow him down to 3 pitches and mastering those 3, and you've really seen the difference this spring. So he's a durable young man. He's a JC transfer, so he could fill in. And the other thing I like is I just feel like that we have a chance to match up a little bit with a couple of left-handers. You know, Josh Sawyer is such a key for us this year. The young man's just worked his tail off to get back and being pitch ready. And so utilizing him is going to be critical. We can get 2 outings a week if it's short or if it's up to 2 innings. That's going to be important for us. I think he's better in that role than trying to start because he has a tendency to throw too many pitches. Had some power in his left-handed delivery. So there's multiple others that you could see in a little bit more matchup and maybe even using more guys in a game because we don't have a lot of dominance when it comes to newcomers.
Well, not to gloss over your starting rotation, but you got Nolan Kingham back, and he's on everybody's list as a potential All-American at the top of your rotation. You're moving Chase Schubert into the rotation. You got Henley, as said as the number 3. What are you looking for Nolan to improve on last year? It was a good year. What's he got to do to have a great year? And as far as Schubert, you know, I guess he threw something like 42 innings. You got to stretch him out. What are your expectations of those two?
Well, the thing that I like about Nolan is he's a excellent Friday night kid because he can get deep into games. He threw five innings the other day and 55 pitches.
Wow.
And when you can be that conservative with your pitch count, then it allows you to get deep in counts, and it protects the bullpen going into the weekend.
Right.
I think the thing, there's two things he really has to continue to work on, his glove side fastball and mastering his changeup, because he didn't use the changeup enough, in my opinion, last year.
Mm-hmm.
His sinker is really good to arm side, but if he can master his glove side fastball, he tends to be up when he's away, and I'd like him to be through the knees on that pitch. But his demeanor is awesome. He really can handle, he's kind of got a little Houdini in him at times, because he can, he's got escapability. And, you know, he can minimize some damage when it looks when it looks pretty bleak. He can get us out of some things, and so I really like him there. Chase, we started. I talked to a summer league coach at Cape Cod, and we moved him into the starting role the last two outings in Kootenai, and it was a good move for us. And Mike did a great job with him. But the thing that Chase still has to learn is that, you know, when a guy miscues a ball and gets a base hit, and you know things unravel a little bit, you've got to still be able to pitch the weak contact and not go from being a boxer and having a plan to becoming a fighter and wanting to overthrow, and everything reverts back to velocity instead of command, and still staying in control of the game. So, you know, that's something that he's working on, and he's getting better and better at it every day.
Well, Coach, we know Bo Ridgeway is your stopper. 2-2, 1.89 ERA last year, 12 saves. Third in the Big 12, 25th nationally. He's not your he's not your everyday normal stopper. He doesn't throw 95, 96, but, boy, he seems to get people out. How much flexibility does that give you, knowing that you have a guy in that role? Because before you got here, that was a critical error, critical area, and Texas struggled to find that guy that could close games. How big a luxury is that for you, knowing you got experience as a closer?
First of all, I appreciate you calling him a stopper, because so many times people look at that as a closer. And in professional baseball, I think it is more so as a closer, because you play 6-7 games a week. You got 3-4, potentially 5 games a week that you're in a close opportunity. College baseball, we play 4 games in a couple of weeks, 5 games. And so if the game's on the line in the 7th, I want to go to my best available arm. And if that's Bo in the 7th, to get out of that jam, then that's what we do. But having Bo now in a reliable role it's comforting. And the reason why he's good is because he just commands the strike zone. Has a great tempo, and if you get to him, you're going to have to earn it. He's not going to give you a bunch of free passes, so you're going to have to hit the ball or have to make some defensive mistakes. And the other thing is, he's very, very resilient mentally and physically. He can bounce back the next day no matter what happens. I can tell Bo on a Tuesday you're going to start and go 5 innings, and the only answer I'll get is yes, sir. And that, to me, is just it's just the right character type of guy on that back end. And so his reliability is why I like him there.
And I just love that approach. I know we saw Joe Maddon do it with the Cubs a little bit in the World Series a couple of years ago, and you look at the last
one. Well, you saw AJ do it this past year.
Absolutely. And, you saw Doc do it with the Dodgers, bringing in Clayton Kershaw in Game 7. Some people thought they should have started him, but it's a lot about mixing and matching now. And like you say, when you need to get an out or get out of an inning, you go to your best arm. And I think we're kind of seeing that change a little bit, aren't we?
We are, and I'm glad you brought that up with Professional and Joe Maddon, because they don't have the luxury to do that until the postseason.
Right.
And they become just like us.
Right.
You look at Charlie Morton in the game out, and you've got a stopper in the back end sitting in the bullpen, and AJ stuck with the hot hand. I mean, it's hard to pull a guy that's 98 with sync at the time. but he just stuck with his guy, and I think that's what we have to do more so throughout a college season, as per maybe a professional team that doesn't. You don't really see that reflection until the postseason,
right?
Which
they just played too many games.
Did exactly that,
right?
Yeah.
Well, looking at the batting order, you got Cody Clemens. You moved him back over to third, and Ryan Reynolds going to be at first. How has Cody looked after this? You know, he's this far removed from the Tommy John surgery, and what precipitated that move over to the hot corner?
Well, as good as those two freshmen played last year on the left side, that was a difficult move for me, and the reason being is because you had such reliability with Ryan at third, and such reliability with David at short. But when you look at the big picture and the scheme of putting the defense together, Ryan Reynolds is a much better first baseman than Cody Clemens. Mm. And Cody Clemens has proven that he's a great third baseman. So it's just maximizing the two players and maximizing our defense. I'm very comfortable with Cody over there. And I know I have the reassurance of having Ryan if I need to go back to him. Mm-hmm. And he continues to work it as well. And you may see him over there some, but really comfortable moving Cody over there. His arm is great. He's moving really well. He's got an easy release, so he's just got to continue working on the intricate parts of the position, the slow roller, and maybe, you know, he'll get dirty, he'll lay out, but just staying in control as he comes up to make that throw are probably the two most recognizable things that I think Cody can improve on. But I like him over there. I like his leadership in the infield as well.
And you've got some newcomers. Like you said, you brought in 21 new players this fall. A lot of JUCOs, I think 10 on your roster, which is very unusual for a school like Texas, where it's hard to get junior college players in. And I know you and other coaches like to have a freshman where you can have them at least 3 years. How about some of these JUCOs? Mason Hibbler at second, Duke Ellis in center field, DJ Petrinski, part-time catcher. What are you looking for from those three and maybe some of the other JUCOs and freshmen?
Well, first of all, the gauntlet was laid on those guys coming in that, hey, there's been a past history of being able to get JC kids in. And, you know, we have gotten great support from the administration. And you need to be academic as well. And that was a piece of it. The other piece of it is when you lose 12 guys in the draft and a handful of them that were not guys that you really expected to move on, you got to fill in the blanks. And that's how I like to utilize JC kids. And we had the opportunity. We had some right guys. Mason Hibbler we signed early because we liked him a lot. He's going to hit in the middle of the order. He can run really well. He's going to start at second, but he can also play short. He may even play some center field or left field. Baker gets healthy. And then Petrinski and McCann are both going to split time, but Petrinski's got the nod right now. Mm-hmm. He brings such a calmness behind the plate, and he can be offensive. And then Duke Ellis can just run and get him. And that's the center fielder that we were missing last year with Zane being out most of the year. So
right,
those are three key positions, and definitely some guys that can give us a little punch offensively as well.
When speaking of punch, I know your offense was Achilles' heel at times, and you couldn't scratch across an extra run or two against Long Beach. I know that was painful. How would the offense differ? I know you had 52 home runs. You had about 70 steals last year. You got some pop in the lineup, but is it going to be more contact, move them up, play for the double, that kind of thing, or how's the offense look?
Well, I think it goes back again to the initial comment about the schedule and maintaining confidence because, you know, it's a hard game, and the further we get away from offense, the further we get away from hitting, the easier it looks. And our guys right now are facing some quality arms that – if you follow them throughout the year and you follow them through this year's coming draft, you're going to realize the types of arms that we face. So we're going to have the ability to score multiple ways, which is kind of our philosophy. But at the same time, I think you'll see potentially a little more action because we can run a little better. I think we handle the bat and the hit and run well. And we've got some guys that can drive the ball in the gaps. Runs, I think, you know, we relied so much on Casey last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've got a kid like Hibbler, Cody Clemens, and Austin Todd, Zubia in the DH with the Bertelson in the DH, Patrinsky. All these guys could run into 5 to 10 home runs. And mm-hmm. I'm going to go out there and say that David Hamilton will hit at least 3 home runs this year.
Oh, right. What's his batting average going to be?
I'm not going to say that.
You want to get him on first, though, somehow, right? How's he looking at
Our offense. He changes our offense when he gets on first base. And,
yep.
I think he's 14 for 14 in stolen bases in the early spring and just in our inter squad games. And he just changes the pressure. And so moving into this weekend, he's made so many improvements in his swing. And so and he's gotten stronger. So, he's going to look like a prospect this year, in my opinion.
Hmm. Interesting. That's good. As your leadoff guy, you got to get him on base and start it off. And
still first.
And again, still first, unless you can find a way. So, hey, David, it's been a treat talking to you. So excited. I just love baseball and can't wait to get out to the dish and see y'all play this weekend. I know you got like 2 more days to relax, 2 or 3, and then you got to start stressing for about 4 months, right?
I quit relaxing January the 2nd. Hey, I appreciate it, Kurt. It's been a pleasure, and enjoyed it.
Well, I hope Coach. We have you on again later in the season, okay?
Okay, appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Coach.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Our guys are always, they always listen, you know, after the game and look you in the eye. But they're really, really upset. And, you know, some of those guys are really angry because it was a game that they really put, I think they put their, they put their egos aside and really came together in terms of attacking and hanging in there together and battling. But obviously we came up one stop short and or one basket short, depending on how you look at it. And the you know, guys are really upset.
Duck, brutal loss on Monday night. Big Monday, double overtime.
Big Monday, Black Monday.
Black Monday. It's getting dark over at the Irwin Center. The Texas Longhorns have lost 3 straight.
Yes, they have.
And Shaka Smart is broken right now. He's a broken coach, and there's no answers. You heard him on the clip we just played. He is a man searching for answers, and the team seems to be in free fall. And that's a legitimate question that Brian Davis asked on Monday night after the 74-73 loss. Now the Longhorns are sitting at 15-11 and 5-8 in the Big 12. We both think that 8 wins in conference can get them into the NCAAs.
Probably.
But can this team win 3 of its next 5 games after what we've seen?
I don't think so.
It doesn't seem like it does.
You know, we've been surprised before, but when 3 of those 5 are at Oklahoma this Saturday, at Kansas State, which just beat Texas and Austin, they may well drop all 3 of those, and then it's probably over because they're not getting in at, 7-11?
You don't think 7 will get them in?
7-11? 4 games under .500? No, I don't think there's any chance that gets them in, partly because they don't have signature wins outside the league. Yes, they beat Oklahoma. Yes, they beat Texas Tech. Yes, they beat TCU when they were at full strength. But all three of those were at home. Mm-hmm. And this selection committee, if you saw the top 16 that they revealed this week, they put a lot of emphasis on road wins and even neutral site wins.
The Alabama win was pretty good.
That was good. You're exactly right. That was good. But, you know, they had chances to beat Duke and
Gonzaga.
Portland, had chances to beat Gonzaga. You know, they beat Butler.
They blew it in Lubbock. Three missed free throws, yeah. Matt Coleman in Lubbock. That's a big win. That would have been a huge win. That would have been a sweep.
Well, you know, we were talking to Scott Drew Monday night, and he even said, this may be the kind of year where seven wins in the league will get you in.
But he's a Big 12 coach.
He's
campaigning.
No question.
In case he ends up at 7-11. Because
exactly.
That could happen.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it'd be a real affront to all those mid-majors because, you know, there are going to be some upsets in these mid-major tournaments, you know. So that's going to hurt their chances even more. But, you know, why are we looking so far ahead? We need to look right down the road on Saturday at Norman, and Trae Young is really fighting it right now. I think he's exhausted.
He's carrying a program on his shoulders.
Like you said, he's maybe ready to put up 40 on somebody.
He might. He just might, and this Texas team is limping,
yes.
Literally
right.
Limping into Norman
right.
With zero confidence. They had a players-only meeting late Monday night, did not come out to speak to the media. Shaka said that they were in there hashing out some things.
But you know what about that?
I think that players-only meeting should have came after you lost by 35 at West Virginia.
Or at least after you lost to K-State and before you went to TCU. And, you know, I was in Fort Worth for the debacle against TCU, and he was saying, yeah, I think the players need to decide. They've got to make a choice. It's almost like Shaka's ordering this players-only meeting. It doesn't seem organic. Like, and partly it makes you wonder about the leadership. Is that you're right? It should have come after that blowout loss at Morgantown, or at the very least after losing at home to Kansas State. So, you know, who are the leaders?
And I'm going to tell you, Duck, as bad as that, as the big a gut punch as that loss to Baylor was. And that was an ugly game.
Ugly game.
And it got interesting in the overtimes,
sure.
Of course,
right.
But it was ragged play.
Bad shooting,
very little offense.
Matt Coleman, one assist during regulation, ended up with three assists in 44 minutes. Your starting point guard gets three assists?
Oh yeah, and you look at it on its base, and they lost the game, one that they had to have. But I go back to that Kansas State game where they go up 14-7 and they're sleepwalking through the whole game. It was like they expected to win just because they're Texas.
They'd already checked it off.
They'd already checked out the box, and Shaka was like, they were like, oh, we're good. No, you're not good. And Kansas State was desperate and hungry and in need of a win, and they came in here and they took it
right.
From Texas. The Longhorns haven't recovered from that. I mean, because if they win that game, they're sitting at 6-7, and all's not lost. But to expect this team that hasn't won two games in a row in more than a month to go 3-2 over these next five with that road gauntlet, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
they don't look like they're capable of doing that.
And your two home games, one of them is West Virginia.
Yeah, West Virginia is very angry. They've
yes.
had their struggles, but they came up back with a blowout win over, I believe it was it Iowa State? Whoever they beat. They beat them by 18. So that's another team that's going to come in
right.
here knowing that it needs to get going.
They're fighting for seeds.
Yeah, this is a good conference. I don't know if it's as great as people nationally are
yeah.
calling it. Do you see a Final Four team in
no,
this conference? I do not.
Not at all.
And I wouldn't be surprised if fewer than two teams make the Elite Eight. this team might get shut out of the first couple of
weeks. You know, this league historically has not done well in going, you know, advancing to the Elite Eight and the Final Four. Oklahoma State back in the day, Eddie Sutton days almost. But, you know, other than Kansas, which is, you know, run hot and cold, they've lost to their Buffaloes and Bucknells and Bradleys and the Killer Bees. So, and this is not a vintage great Kansas team. And that brings up a point, Sid. To me, it's about standard and expectations. I don't know if you saw the quote from Bill Self. You know, they've lost three games at home at Allen Fieldhouse, which never happens. He went off on his team. The last two games, he's benched two starters and put, you know, two new players in there. He's called his players selfish, that they're not doing the little things. Oh, yeah, they're 18-4.
18-4,
It's what you accept, what you demand. And
now you sound like Brent Venables.
Well, I want to ask you a question. That's where I thought about Brent Venables. You remember that, too. I don't know if Shaka's soft, but Shaka's a nice guy. We like Shaka. He's very cerebral. He's in touch with his feelings. He cares about his players. We like Shaka. But he's not a jerk. He's not, you know, you can't just... One of your goals can't be liked by your players. It's okay to be liked, but they've got to fear you a little bit.
Well, they got to know that there are repercussions that come with not performing. And what's happened with Shaka is he's kind of painted himself into a corner. Somebody asked him about depth on Monday night, and he was like, yeah, I know it's tough. I go, well, okay. You recruited James
Banks. This is his third year.
You recruited
Jacob Young,
Royce Hamm.
Jason Febres, how many minutes did he play?
Jace played 17 minutes.
Yeah.
He played 17 minutes.
0 for 2, took two shots.
So you recruited those guys who haven't brought it like you thought they'd bring it. James Banks has been around forever, and he should have, you would think, had he developed, he'd be a suitable backup post-defensive presence when you want to give Mo Bamba a blow. But that's ended up being Jericho Sims, who I really like.
I
like his hustle. I like the fact that he doesn't back down.
I do too.
And he's going to get stronger. He's going to help them next year.
No question.
He's going to be a good – I think he's a program guy. And they need – I think Matt Coleman's a program guy. They need guys that are going to be around for two or three years to develop. The question is, will Shaka be around for two or three years?
Ooh, what are you saying?
I'm saying is Shaka, there's a lot of money on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But does Shaka get tired? I don't think they're going to fire Shaka Smart.
No way.
I do not think they're going to fire
him. Well, definitely not this year.
But will Shaka walk away after this year or next year?
Who knows?
Because sometimes it's just not a fit.
Sometimes it just doesn't work for whatever reason. Last year, 11-22, finished last in the Big 12. Right now, I think they're half a game out of last again this year. If they go in last place in the Big 12, 2 years in a row, don't make the tournament, 3 years, he has zero NCAA tournament wins.
And you're looking at a 46-46 coach.
Yeah.
And
he's been average.
He's been average.
Or below average,
and
probably. If you're last, you're below average.
He's recruited pretty well.
Real well.
And the depth, you know, the second-tier guys, those guys haven't panned out yet.
That's on him.
But you bring in Mo Bamba, you bring in Dylan Osakowski. Those are really good players. And you hope, you know, and Dylan would be foolish to leave after this season.
Where? Go back to Tulane?
Yeah, unless he wants to just, you know,
he's not leaving.
Go play overseas.
He's not leaving.
He's not ready for an NBA grind. So he's going to be back. I think Matt Coleman will be back.
I got a question for you. This roster, as it's constructed right now, how many NBA players are there?
I'm going to say one.
Mo Bamba.
That's it.
I agree
with you. That's it. I don't. Jericho Sims is a nice player,
knows?
but I don't know that he'll be an NBA player. Matt Coleman is a really good. Is going to be a really good college player.
Mm-hmm.
He's not. He doesn't blow you. He's not a good shooter. He's not going to blow you away with athleticism and the today's NBA. The point guards are the best athletes on the team.
Oh yeah,
James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry. Those are extreme. Chris Paul. Those are extremely athletic
type
guys. So. I think he would struggle. I think he would be a D-League type. Andrew Jones was an NBA prospect, Duck, and sadly he may not play again. I don't know the long term prognosis, but I would love to see Andrew Jones back in a Texas uniform.
Absolutely,
but that hurt. That hurt this team.
Right,
that's 15 or 16 points that you're not getting. That's less ball handling for Curran Roach and Eric Davis. That's Matt Coleman. Mm-hmm. Taking a load off of his back, but the fact that he's not going to play because of the leukemia really hurt this team. The thing that also really hurt them is while Andrew Jones was on the team and playing, they let some wins get away from them, and those hens are coming home to roost as
so
we speak.
So what
Doug.
Would you – we're sitting here. Texas is a very mediocre 15-11, just four games over 500. And 5-8 in the league, 5-8.
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking for out of Shaka the rest of this season? They got five games, the Big 12 tournament, and I think you and I think the NIT. So as he, you know, looks at what he has and tries to regroup and muster up some momentum, what are your expectations of Shaka the rest of this year?
I think he's going to coach with more desperation. He's going to have to take some chances in his lineup. Got to get more out of Dylan. And I don't know where his head is. He had 15. He was 5 out of 11.
But 6 rebounds.
Rebounds.
You got to do better than that.
You're 6'9". You got to get in the double digits on the rebounds. And got to get more out of Dylan. And you got – Curran Roach has got to figure some things out. 0-for-5 from 3. He just kept shooting threes. The beginning of the second half, he missed like three out of four trips, ended with Curran Roach launching threes. You're too good an athlete to be settling for three-pointers, especially when you're on the worst three-point shooting team in the Big 12. He got to the bucket late in that game, and then in the overtime at the end, I think he got bumped. I think he did get bumped. They didn't call it. That's a difficult call at the end of a game, but you wonder why he didn't go to the rack again. Very strong, and I think that Shaka is going to have to be a lot more desperate. He's not a yeller, but you know he kind of intimated to you that he may have used some choice words with him after the K-State game, but it doesn't come across. To be his demeanor to yell at these guys.
No, it's not. Like we've said, he's a very thoughtful, reflective, cerebral.
And you don't have to be a jerk to get it done.
No, you don't. And none of us are saying you need to be a jerk. But, you know, the bottom line says it comes down to they don't have shooters. They don't have shooters, and they haven't in the 3 years that Shaka's been here.
And I put it in my column that's up on statesman.com, hook'em.com. That's the first thing you ever asked Shaka. Who's going to make shots? And first thing you ever asked him when he came to coach here.
And I usually try to ask him at the start of every year because, you know, we still haven't seen it. You know, they need an A.J. Abrams on this team, a Brandy Perriman, so much. Somebody they can count on, like, you know, like Monday night, you know, the end of both overtimes, you know, they're coming down the court, and I'm thinking – who's going to take this shot? Who do you want to take this shot? Mo has not been good, you know, facing the basket. The little baby jump hook hadn't been effective.
He made one of those.
He doesn't have great hands unless it's a lob.
He catches it with two.
Yeah, but he misplays a lot of entry passes. I don't know. Who do you trust? Who do you want to take the last shot when it comes down to overtime in the closing seconds?
Sadly, Eric Davis. He's made the most threes.
He made a big three Monday night.
He's not afraid. He's knocked down some big shots. He struggles on the other end at times. But when I saw Curran Roach with the ball at the end of that second overtime, I thought they're going to lose. But if it had been Eric Davis, I would have liked their chances.
I'm with you. I would have
made
Eric Davis
He's made some desperation threes in his career, but he didn't get his hands on the ball.
You see, I don't know as far as recruiting. You know, I know he got the kid out of Portland who was from Alaska, but and a kid from Ohio, I believe. But he's got to get a couple shooters who can fill up the basket, because we can't overemphasize that enough, because they have these long scoring drives. What did they have Monday night? 2 points in the first, what was it, 6 minutes?
That was awful.
6 minutes and you got 2 points?
Awful. They couldn't buy a bucket.
You know,
couldn't buy a bucket.
And when you have these scoring droughts, the team gets down, then you start pressing.
And the crowd.
The crowd
withdraws.
Is not into it. Then you take that back on defense where you're worried about your shot. The shot's not falling and you give up a transition bucket or a backdoor cut. And it just feeds on itself. And so that's what I would say, you know, you got to go get some shooters, Shaka.
Gotta go get some shoes. Well, let's talk about the women for a minute.
Big game coming up.
Big game coming up. Stillwater is not as big a game as the Big Monday.
No, I didn't mean Stillwater.
They've got a little piece of business before they get to those Baylor Lady Bears. Karen Aston, they've recovered nicely since that blowout loss.
Because they're better than these other teams.
They're better than these other teams, and they beat the teams they're supposed to beat. The next step is got to be, can you slay the giant that is the Baylor Lady Bears? Embarrassing loss in Waco. The guards, Brooke McCarty and Ariel Atkins, did not show up that night.
Right.
And those big girls, Lauren Cox and Kalani Brown,
terrific,
went for like 34 and 18. And Joyner Holmes, that's the question.
Showing a glimpse.
Joyner Holmes seemingly committed to playing in the lane. The question is, will Joyner Holmes play in the lane when she's going up against 6'7 Kalani Brown and 6'4 Lauren Cox? Those girls are bigger, but she's a better athlete. Those girls are not great athletes, not those two. They're big, and they can move. Joyner Holmes, much better athletically. Does she embrace the challenge that will come with playing against bigger girls? She doesn't mind posting up the small girls from K-State like she did the other night, but is she gonna be a post presence? Especially if Adrienne Caron-Goudreau doesn't play.
I don't know. Not when you think you're the next Kobe Bryant.
I don't know that she thinks that anymore. Mark Rosner, our boy Mark Rosner, asked her, how do you get away from trying to be that? And she was pretty diplomatic in her answer, but I just still think that she wants to be a big guard. But she's not good enough on the perimeter.
Doesn't have a consistent enough shot. And like
it's
you
not,
say.
Well, it's consistent. It is consistent. She misses almost every time. She's not a shooter yet, and she's got a few dozen sessions with Tina Thompson and Jamie Carey from becoming a good perimeter player. She's got to be an athlete at this point.
All right, let me ask you this: how big is Monday night's game against Baylor here? Looking ahead to the whole season and what Karen Aston is trying to accomplish.
They can't get blown out again.
But that's such a small standard.
I know it's a small standard, you know, but they've got to win, but are they going to run into Baylor again? Who knows? You want to send a message to Baylor that, yeah,
you're equal.
Yeah, you're our equal, but do they believe that?
I don't know. And I'm not sure Karen believes
it. And if those guards don't show up, they're going to get blown out again.
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
Well, Ariel Atkins has just had a sensational season.
She's a WNBA player.
She's been terrific. Brooke McCarty's shot hadn't been there all year. I'm a big Suge Sutton fan. I like her a lot, but Ariel Atkins and Brooke McCarty are going to have to get it done, because
and LaShawn Higgs.
And LaShawn Higgs too, because they're not going to have their way in the paint. You know, Cox and Brown are going to control things there.
And that's why I like this matchup. It's a classic matchup of a team with good bigs against a team with really good guards. They need to control that Christy Wallace girl.
Oh, she went off in Waco.
She went off in Waco for 27.
Right.
They need to control her. The big girls are going to get theirs. They just are. Yeah.
And they need help from the crowd, too.
You need help
from
the crowd.
They need to have an atmosphere like they had in Waco.
It's going to be fun. There's going to be a lot of people there. The women's crowds have been showing up this year because the product is really good.
It is. So, Karen's done a great job.
No one hates losing to Kim Mulkey more than Karen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what it is. And no one hates losing to Texas more than Mulkey.
Right.
So it's a blood feud. Right. I love it.
Oh, no.
It's got a little bit of spice. It's a nationally televised game. I think if the Texas Guards show up, they can beat the Baylor Lady Bears, but they can't start 2-15 like they did when you were in Waco.
No,
and you look, as I said, Brooke looked like she was about to cry at the end of the half.
She couldn't buy a shot in the first half.
She hit that little runner and she just ran off the court like whatever.
Yeah. I just think this is such a huge measuring stick, and always will be as long as Karen and Kim are in the league together. I think it's essential. They put up a competitive performance, and like you say, can't get blown out. They get blown out, maybe even lose by 10 or 12. It's going to plant seeds of doubt, like, well, we're not good enough to play with these elite teams.
And there are only like 3 or 4 elite teams in the country.
They play with UConn.
UConn is a good matchup for Texas because they don't have big girls.
Mm-hmm.
They don't.
Right.
They're as small and a perimeter oriented as they've been in years. So that's not a bad matchup for Texas. Texas should have beat UConn.
Mm-hmm.
But teams like South Carolina and Louisville, those are, and Baylor, those are teams with big girls that can go to the rack, and that's Texas's Achilles heel. Jatari White is a pretty good offensive player, but
she's not Kalani Brown.
She has 8 blocks on the year, and she's 6'4".
Yeah.
She has 8 blocks. She doesn't jump well. Caron Goudreau, at the time of this taping, still up in the air whether she plays, on tonight.
Right.
So we'll see about her. From what I hear, it's not the wrist is not serious. They may sit her. Because they're going to be Texas Tech.
You don't need her against Tech.
You don't need her against Tech, so she'll probably play. But I like the Ariel Atkins, Brooke McCarty, LaShawn Higgs. Those three got to go for 40.
They've got to show up.
They've got to go for 40 or 50 for Texas to have a shot.
Yeah, I agree.
That will do it for episode 86 of On Second Thought. We got to give our thanks to Texas baseball coach David Pierce for joining us. For the Duck, I'm Sed Gold, and we will see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sed and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.
Amazon has everything for back to school. Zebra lunchbox? Check. Cool Adidas gear like t-shirts, shoes, and backpacks? Check. Triceratops folders and pencils? Check. Laser cat t-shirts? Check. Get your back to school shopping done now at amazon.com/back to school and enjoy free shipping on millions of items. No need to leave your home or hassle with crowds. Amazon.com. No better place to get everything back to school from A to Z.